This is a dill pickle, a mighty pretty pickle, especially when he joins you at the show. We have lots of pretty pickles waiting for you at the refreshment center. They're plump, tender, mouth-watering. Wouldn't one taste good right now?
This is the Dark Discussions Network of Podcasts, a website that has been designed to bring you all of your genre needs. The website is www.darkdiscussions.com. We have close to 30 different podcasts, which include in-depth movie reviews, commentaries that follow the running time of each film reviewed, and interviews with directors, actors, filmmakers, and stunt people. Also found at the website are written reviews and columns, release notices, and video discussions. If you are listening to this podcast, welcome. This is the debut episode of From the Art House to the Grindhouse, a podcast that delivers to you audio reviews of either recently released movies or those that are about to appear on video on demand. Our website receives dozens of screeners every 14 days, and we have decided to come together as a network to review each of them. Each screener was assigned to our podcast hosts, and the films are given honest reviews by our eclectic group of critics. I am Philip from the Dark Discussions podcast, the original podcast from the network. I am here to basically introduce each of our co-hosts and what film they are going to review in this episode. Basically, we have anywhere between 6 to 8 films in each episode that we will be reviewing. Some of the reviews may last 5 minutes, while some may go on for 15. They are generally in-depth, and if there are spoilers, spoiler warnings are given at the time the spoilers are to be spoken of. We try to give an honest and fair opinion of each film, and anyone who is listening must understand that the movies were not viewed by all 30 co-hosts of all the 30 podcasts, and actually, since there's 30 podcasts, there's 2 to 3 or 4 podcasts per podcast, so we could have up to 80 different people who could do reviews. However, only one podcast or one podcaster will be reviewing each individual film, so it is generally the opinion of that one podcast/podcaster. Hopefully you enjoy this. We're going to try to get this to be maybe a quarterly podcast. Some of the reviewers actually even said they would like to do it monthly, but it is kind of hard to get everybody involved monthly, and so we're probably going to at least start off going quarterly. However, with quarterly releases, there will most likely be 2 releases generally within a week apart, because since we usually get around 20 or so screeners that we're going to review, we're going to break it into at the least 2 episodes, maybe even 3, because of the number of movies that are going to be reviewed. The first movie that we're going to review is entitled Night of Horror, Nightmare Radio, just like every other film that is to be reviewed on this podcast. It is a 2020 release to the general public. The movie is being reviewed by co-host Bill of the podcast Club Dread. Club Dread is one of the newer podcasts to the network. It is not as prolific as some of the other podcasters. However, the podcast is a very informative podcast with generally two co-hosts. However, this review will be done by co-host Bill of Club Dread. He was also the co-host of a former podcast entitled the Horror Mafia Podcast, which was a nominated for best podcast at a convention just last year in 2019. However, at this time it is in hiatus, and Club Dread is a spinoff podcast by Bill and co-host Joey. And so I will pass the torch over to Bill now to review.
Hi, this is Bill Casinelli from the Horror Mafia Podcast and Club Dreadcast, here to give you a spoiler-free review of A Night of Horror, Nightmare Radio. Distributed by Uncorked Entertainment, A Night of Horror, Nightmare Radio is credited with having 8 directors: Oliver Park, Jason Bugnacki, A.J. Briones, Joshua Long, Sergio Morchillo, Adam O'Brien, Luciano Onetti, Nicholas Onetti, Pablo S. Pastor, and Matthew Richards. The writing credits include Mauro Croce, Michael L. Fawcett, Michael Kratzer, Guillermo Lockhart, Matthew Richards, and Santiago Taboada. And now that I've completely massacred the names of the writers and directors of the film, let me state this. I went into the film thinking it was going to be another Creepshow-type anthology, or After Midnight, or The Twilight Zone. Boy, was I wrong. A Night of Horror, Nightmare Radio is more like a movie that some guy found a whole bunch of really good horror shorts on the web and decided he was going to put them all together in a movie. And the wraparound story that he uses is that there's a DJ at a radio station whose name is Rod, and he looks suspiciously a lot like Rob Zombie, is telling these stories at the witching hour of midnight. And he's taking calls and telling stories. Now, the first thing I noticed about this film is the fact that the quality is amazing. The lighting, the scenery, the camera work is really good. Unlike a bunch of uncorked DVDs that I have lying around as screeners, this one is shot really well in every aspect. Every story is really beautifully done. And speaking of, let's get to the stories. The first one is a really, really good story. I find it very, very strong. It's about a phenomenon that I really love, about the death photography back in the old days when people would photograph loved ones who had passed away, but make them look like they were still alive, for memories. I think they started off really great with this one. In fact, I think it's one of my favorite entries in the entire movie. The main actor was great. As a child actress, she was amazing. Everything about this was great. The acting, the sets, the lighting, the camera work, the sound, audio, the costumes, the effects. In fact, there was a couple of times where I couldn't tell if that was a real person, an actress, or an effects piece. That's how good it is. And the horror, let me tell you, the child actor is put in a room armed only with a camera and a spoon. And that spoon, her tool, is what she uses to find out the most sinister of secrets. Now, I'm sure that the final twist in this one will confuse a lot of people, but I got it. And boy, did I get it. I loved it. There is just something about this segment that reminded me of, if you've ever played the video game on the PlayStation called Fatal Frame, you'll get where I'm coming from. All in all, a great piece. And now on to the next segment. This one revolves around a hairdresser who is presumably talking to a national celebrity while he's doing her hair in what seems to be a most unconventional way. Now, while most people who watch these movies would be like, all right, where's the story going? What's going on? Those of us who have been involved in theater realize that a monologue is hard to do, and when done well, is amazing. And in this guy's case, he is great. He pulls it off so well. And the very end, the part that is the twist, you'll see coming a mile away, but at the same time, who cares? This guy is a great actor. As an actor who has done stage work, I can assure you this is not an easy task. In fact, I myself have done some monologues for the stage, including When You Coming Back, Red Rider, which, if you look hard enough, is basically The Devil's Rejects in a diner. All in all, everybody will see the end coming. The twist is not a big twist, so it still delivers the goods, and that's what matters. Our next story is about a man named Willie Bingham, a man who, while high on drugs and alcohol, raped and murdered a girl and was sent to prison. Now, this prison is a very experimental type of rehabilitation, not unlike A Clockwork Orange, but very different. With this, the prison's surgeons would amputate a body part and then exhibit you through the schools to basically show off what would happen if the kids were to do bad things, kind of like Scared Straight, but in a really extreme fashion. The one addition to this punishment was the fact that the family of the victims got to choose whether to continue and go on with the surgeries, making this kind of a morality tale. And they are the only ones who can say stop to the surgeries. The next segment is really the one that threw me off the most. This one is totally in Spanish with English subtitles. And here's the thing is, I do speak fluent Spanish. However, it was kind of distracting trying to read the subtitles while listening to what they say. And a lot of the times, they weren't exactly what they were saying. So that was kind of weird, in addition to the fact that this whole segment was some white guy on a radio station. Come on, now. Now, the next segment was not done by the radio station DJ telling a story, but by him going down to look at a TV, which turned on by itself, and saw the TV tell him a story. This is one of two. And I think this one was actually pretty good. This one has a little girl who notices that there's a balloon. So she goes to investigate and grabs the balloon. And then, hey, she sees another one. Reminisce of It? Anyone? But still, this one really does deserve the chills and thrills, and it's got the gore. So as we follow the kid around the house, I tell you, it gets scary and creepy and weird. Oh yeah, just what you want. The next story involves a really unique situation. This girl wakes up in the middle of the woods, totally naked and on plastic. She's wondering what's going on. As she looks around for some kind of clue, we see that there's a hunter, a guy with a shotgun. And he's talking on a cell phone to somebody else. Well, this is her chance to make her escape. And what ensues is a cat and mouse through the woods, which has an ending you're not going to believe, and one which I approve of wholeheartedly. First of all, this is my probably second favorite entry of the entire movie. I think that the girl who plays the main woman in this is amazing. She's a great actress, and she's damn good looking too. Wow, is she single? Anyway, this is the story you're going to get full frontal nudity and gore in. This is the one you've been waiting for. At the end, the twist is whatever it is. If you didn't see it coming, then oh well. I did, of course, but I've seen a lot of these. In any case, I love this one. And which brings us to our last one. That is a lady who comes home noticing that her front door was open and decides to walk inside anyway instead of running to go call the cops. So apparently she's not home alone. Turns out this is also one of those stories not mentioned by the guy on the radio, but from the TV. This lady named Lydia, she comes home from work or wherever she's going one day, and she sees that the door is open. She walks in, shuts the door behind her. Yay! Terror ensues. Anyway, this one I really found kind of boring and stupid. So it's definitely not one of my favorites, but hey, I mean, whatever. It's got a cool ending, I guess, but nothing you didn't see coming. One of my biggest pet peeves in this one, though, was if you have a semi-closed door in front of you and your keys are on the other side, would you really stick your hand between the crack to grab the keys? Or wouldn't you just open the fucking door? Come on, now! Anyway, enough of that foolishness. I thought this was another one of the weaker stories, but all in all, not too bad. The ending is alright. Then finally, at the end of the movie, we have the wraparound story do its own thing, and you find out what's going on with some of the callers and what happened. And in any case, it was no big surprise. Again, kind of meh. So, basically, these people made some cool little shorts on the internet. Some guy said, oh yeah, I like these. Let's put them together and wrap them around some kind of subject, and here we are. Some good, some bad, some meh. Gotta say, the first one is one of my favorites. The one with the photography, love it. The one with Willie Bingham, I love that one too. The Spanish one is the weakest. It's like, why bother? And when you have to like make sure that the music is trying to tell you when to be scared, I don't like that. The music was over the top and loud in the Spanish one, where it's like, here, you're going to be scared now. No, it never works for me, so. And the one with the girl in the woods is my second favorite. Anyway, if you guys see this movie, let me know what you think. If I were to give this a rating, I'd say it's a 3 out of 5 or a 6 out of 10. Either way, love you all. Bye-bye.
Okay, so that is the first review of the podcast. This new podcast, once again, entitled From the Art House to the Grindhouse. Now, we do have other screeners and other reviews coming, and let's get into a couple of them now. We do have one from Kevin Letts. Kevin Letts is a co-host of Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. He basically joined that podcast recently in 2020. Prior to that, it was a solo cast that did not have any more than one podcaster, and Kevin has joined that and basically discussing various horror movies and television shows. He's here to review a film called Battlefield 2025, which is a science fiction film, and yeah, let's hear what he has to say about that film.
Hi, this is Kevin from outside St. Louis, and my assigned film is Battlefield 2025. This was done by Uncorked Entertainment with Funhouse Films, Triple G Production, and Paradox Universe. It was released in July of 2020, filmed somewhere in Arizona. Directed by, and I'm going to mess up this name, Joseph Mba. Literally, it's spelled M-B-A-H. Joseph M-B-A-H also wrote it with someone named Robert Conway. Never heard of any of these people before, and looking at the cast, I've never heard of any of these actors before. Only one was in a show that I've was in a series of TV shows, like one-time things, like guy behind the counter or things like that, or maybe had a name but wasn't there for more than one episode. And he was in shows like Better Call Saul, This Is Us, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, along with a few others. The rest of all the cast really go by their first names. The alien in the movie is just cast as Alien. They don't even call it The Alien, just Alien. There's about 16 cast members, probably more, that are only known by their first names. I didn't even bother learning their first names because most of them ended up dying anyway. They're there primarily for the body count. They serve no other purpose than to entertain us by having their heads become wet red clouds of blood, have big holes shot through their bodies, stabbed, or have their necks crushed for our entertainment. The summary from IMDb reads, "Weekend campers, an escaped convict, young lovers, and a police officer experience a night of terror when a hostile visitor from another world descends on a small Arizona town." That sums it up pretty well. This movie has a definite Predator feel to it, with some elements of War of the Worlds at the beginning. The whole thing starts off with a guy who works at a local observatory, gets drunk at a bar, tries to pick women up who turn him away, and he goes into work the next day while massively hungover. There are various space images of spacescapes, nebula, planets, universes, that sort of thing, and then eventually focuses on pictures of Earth from orbit, and then we go to a small town in Arizona, and it looks like it's a Friday afternoon because it looks like people are getting ready to go away for a nice long weekend. Let's see, there's also other things going on. There's a woman in good physical shape. She's pretty much the movie's eye candy. She's getting ready to go to what she tells her husband, who looks about 15 years older than her and massively out of shape. She tells him she's going to a long yoga session and that we'll run into the night and don't wait up for her. This long yoga session is really the wife meeting up with her lover, who is the son of a local car repair shop. And let's see, we also have two sisters going on a camping trip with the older sister's fiance and a guy in his late teens who's going with the younger sister. He thinks he's going to get some from the younger sister, but the younger sister keeps on telling everybody except him that they're only friends. One of the guys at the car shop, the local car shop, goes out, sells drugs to a young couple who also plan on having a weekend camping trip. And the guy from the car shop, after that, goes out into the desert on his lunch break to pick up more product from his supplier, who never actually shows up. Meanwhile, there are two convicts being driven to a higher security prison. They are in a car that has no barriers between the back seat and the front seat. It's no wonder that these two convicts overpower the police and escape. During the struggle, one of the convicts gets shot and later dies from his wounds. Meanwhile, while everyone is preparing for a fun Friday night, we get glimpses from what looks like the bridge of an alien ship with clicks and gurs and whirs that is essentially the alien language. And we see phrases translated for us in English like, "What's your status? How is your planning going along?" Stuff like that, and entering the planet's atmosphere. So, later on, we have the woman who's cheating on her husband. She's out with her lover, shooting a rifle. She doesn't know what she's doing. The boyfriend shows her how to hold a rifle, and then he compliments her on how hot she looks while holding the gun. They look at each other like they're ready for it, and then we cut away to a guy, to the guy trying to get his supply of drugs, but like I said, his supplier never shows up. We cut to the two sisters going to the top of a hill that has a very nice view of the desert, and they're talking about the relationships. And then you hear the sound of the spaceship screaming to Earth and crashing. That's the part that reminds me very much of War of the Worlds. And then while they're looking towards the direction of the crash site, you see an electrical-like, white spiderweb-like field come out from the crash site, and then all of a sudden everybody's electronic devices do not work. Cell phones, cars, radios, stereos, etc. are now all on the fritz. They do not work, so everybody is stranded and they can't call anybody. The hungover astronomer sees the crash on his computer, and he's wondering what's going on, and from his computer he picks up the ship's communications, and he wants to go out and investigate because he thinks this might actually be a UFO. He's right, it is a UFO. By the time he gets there, it's nighttime. And nighttime comes, both sets of the campers are relaxing. The one couple that were stoned, they're comfortably stoned, resting in their tent, sleeping. And the group of four are relaxing at a fire. As the one convict that does not get shot approaches the group, they don't know he's an escaped convict, and he's asking them for water and first aid supplies because he said his friend got shot in a hunting accident. The older guy goes with the convict with some supplies to try to help out, but as they get to the convict's car, they find the other convict is dead from his wounds. And then out of nowhere, a police officer shows up and offers the help. The convict goes into the car, pulls the gun from the car's glove compartment, holds the officer and the guy at gunpoint, and tells the guy to take the officer's gun and gives it to him. He complies, and then the convict brings his new hostages back to the campsite, where he has the younger guy, I'm going to call him Mr. Friendzone. He has Mr. Friendzone tie up everybody, and then the convict knocks out the teenager with one of his guns. When the astronomer arrives at the crash site, he discovers the alien, who is hurt from the crash, but not hurt enough to get up and blast a hole clean through the astronomer's torso, so he's dead. Body number one. And his assistant who was there with him, that was body number two. Let's see, after that, the body count starts to increase. The guy waiting for his drug supplier can't get back into town because his car is dead because of the EMP. The alien comes across him, kills him. The couple having an affair can't go anywhere because the engine's dead, the phones are dead. And then the guy becomes dead because the alien approaches him while he's trying to fix the car. And then the woman sees what happens. She tries to grab the rifle. She can't get a good grip on it. And then the alien zaps the whole car, and now she's dead. The stone couple, they wake up hearing noises in the desert. The woman gets up, goes out. She's dead. The guy gets up, goes out, finds his wife or girlfriend or whatever. He's upset, and then turns around, the alien kills him too. Like I said, these characters are mostly for the body count. Then the alien makes it to the camp with the two couples, the convict and the police officer. The alien immediately kills the fiance, crushes his neck, everybody runs. The cop gets his gun back from the convict and also grabs the convict's gun that he already had. Shoots a couple rounds at the alien. Alien seems armored, not harmed, but the cop realizes later that the bullets did slow him down, so he thinks that this alien might be injured, if not killed. And then the convict escapes unarmed. The sisters, Mr. Venzone, and the officer flee into the desert. The older sister trips, falls, breaks her leg. And they help her into what looks like a trailer park, but it's actually a place where they can get food and medical equipment. The officer treats the sister's leg, sets it. The officer and Mr. Friendzone go outside, and the boy just says, look, the girl with the broken leg's only slow him down, let's just leave her behind. The cop, you know, berates him, says, you know, how selfish he is, and they all try to leave the site. So they can try to make it into town. Why they didn't leave the older sister there to rest in shelter, where she would probably have been a little safer. I don't know why they just didn't leave her there, just so that she'd be safer there. But the alien catches up with them, kills the older sister. Friend Zone runs away from the group. The cop and the other sister go, and the younger sister go the other way and get lost in the desert. The convict escapes, eventually runs into the husband, whose cheating wife is now dead, but he doesn't seem to be that he would be broken up over it. But the husband captures the convict with a shotgun. The convict tells him about the monster in the desert. Of course, the guy doesn't believe him. Mr. Friendzone appears out of nowhere, tells Mr. Shotgun that the monster is real. He doesn't believe a word of it until the alien shows up and turns Mr. Shotgun's solid head into a bloody mist. Convict and Friendzone eventually run back into the sister and the officer. The alien isn't far behind, crushes Mr. Friendzone's neck while the officer shoots more bullets into the alien. Eventually, the convict, the sister, and the officer get confronted by the alien. The convict goes up behind the alien, holds him back, pretty much puts him into a bear hug while the police officer comes up and fires about 8 rounds under the alien's helmet. Gotta love these guns that can shoot endless number of rounds without needing to be reloaded. But that's what movies do for you. So the three survivors, they're relieved that it seems like it's all over, and the cop says, oh, it's all over, and then they go into their town, which looks more like a city, which is being attacked by a squadron of alien ships, and then the convict looks at it and responds, looks like it's just the beginning, in almost a laughing way, and that's the movie. What are my thoughts on this movie? Well, the technology effects, like the alien, he has this screen that kind of pops up out of his kind of like a projection from his arm, and he can draw on it like an iPad. I mean, that was pretty cool. But the rest of it, the spacecape shots look nice, but other than that, unless if you like movies with bad acting, low budget head explosions, and not much of a plot, this is the movie for you. But for the rest of us, no, it's pretty much a waste of time. This is the type of movie I would have watched with my friends in my hometown, where we were doing our own riff tracks and had a good laugh at the expense of the really bad acting. Even the alien was a bad actor. I mean, it would stop once or twice, spread its arms out, and give a big roar when nobody was around. No reason why. Speaking of no reason why, there was one scene where the convict was talking with somebody, and they do this quick flashback scene, quick as in blink and you'll miss it, flashback scene of the shootout between the escaped convicts and the police officers escorting them to their prison. Absolutely no reason for the flashback, but they just put that in there anyway. As well, the night lighting was terrible. You have characters complaining about how dark it is, but you can see their shadows on the ground and the rocks behind them or around them. It was obviously nighttime when they did these scenes, but it looked like they had that garage lighting, like with the four lights off on the side, and they're complaining about how dark it is, but they could easily, it's not really convincing when there's light, you could see their shadows on the ground, and it was obvious that they, if they really wanted to, they can do shadow puppets on the surrounding boulders. This movie gets, for me, 1 out of 5 stars. It's bad acting. They put too much time setting things up. It's about 31 minutes before the alien really shows up. Like I said, the night lighting is bad, and the plot leaves a bit to be desired. This movie is called Battlefield 2025, and there isn't even a battle in it. It's more like an alien slasher movie in the desert. That's my review of Battlefield 2025. I hope I have spared those of you who are thinking of watching this movie from wasting your time. If you want to see a better performed movie with an alien hunting people, watch Predator.
The next review is by a couple of podcasters, Brandon and Joey from He's Gonna Need Therapy, the podcast, another podcast from the network. They are here to review a film entitled Deanie Bean is Dead. I am not quite familiar with this film, but it does sound like it may be a horror comedy, maybe? I'm not quite sure. But let's hear what the guys have to say about it.
Thank you. What's up, Dark Discussions? This is Brandon and Joey from He's Gonna Need Therapy. Joey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good.
Good, good. Did you have a good day?
Yeah, I just had dessert.
Yo, what'd you have?
This apple crumble thing.
Oh, okay. The apple crumble things that were in the fridge.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Was it good?
Yeah, it was.
Good, good. So for those that aren't familiar with us, we are a short-form monthly podcast. And what we do, so Joey is my son, so we will pull up movies, usually a newer movie and an older movie. And many of them are probably a little too inappropriate for him because at this time he is 12. We've been doing this since you were 11.
Yeah.
And but we've been watching horror movies together since you were about 6. So I think that's when you saw The Ring for the first time, which is way too young.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's okay. You're still normal and well-adjusted, and you're not a serial killer, I'm pretty sure.
You don't know.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. Wow, I didn't expect that response. So what we're talking about tonight, and we want to thank our buddy Phil from Dark Discussions, and of course all our buddies on the Dark Discussions podcast network, and we're doing a short mini-review for a new film called Deenie Bean is Dead. Joey, why don't you hit us with the details on Deenie Bean?
A down-on-her-luck woman tries to win back her ex-boyfriend at his engagement party without revealing that her recently strangled boss is in the trunk of her car.
Okay, and what year is this from?
2020, okay, this year.
How long was it?
About an hour and 30 minutes.
Okay, so nice and quick?
Yeah.
So that's a good synopsis. We don't want to give away a ton of information about this, but Deenie, or Deanna, as she's referred to the whole time until you meet a certain character that calls her Deenie Bean.
Yeah.
Which is good, because that's a weird name. But yeah, her name's Deanna. She has a tough job, and she's gone through a breakup, and things are not going quite well for her. And as mentioned in the synopsis, she strangles her boss.
Who is rude.
Yeah, so she kind of deserved it. Like, the boss kind of almost died, and then saved her, and then fired her, and then she should, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say that. That's not nice of me. But so, yeah, puts her in the trunk of the car, and then while trying to dispose of the body, that's when hijinks ensue. So, Joy, what are your overall thoughts? Did you enjoy this movie?
Yes, I did.
Is it a horror movie?
No.
No, definitely not a horror movie. It's a black comedy. So if you are a hardcore horror person that only likes horror films, it's not going to be for you. But if you like kind of awkward black comedies, this is a good one. This director has done a couple short films and a couple feature-length films, but nothing ever really big.
No.
It's like they work as a cinematographer as well. But I would like to see what they could do with some more money, because I thought overall the story was pretty entertaining. I think the characters did a good job. There's a few, like, you know, kind of actual touching moments and just like this woman's development, which was cool. And Joe, why don't you give some likes and dislikes and what you thought about some of the characters?
I thought it was funny. I thought it was a funny movie. I also liked how it wasn't what I expected. The beginning of part seemed like a different genre than the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked how it shifted over.
Yeah.
Some of the characters were pretty ridiculous. Like, they made weird faces, and they were, like, just overall weird.
Yeah, the guy with glasses and his blonde date at the party.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were a little strange.
I don't really have any dislikes.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I thought it was pretty good. Again, you can kind of feel the low-budgetness, and that's just kind of, you can feel those things and just the way it's filmed and the performances, but I don't know how much they made this for. It can't have been much, but they did a really pretty good job. Let's see. Let's check the B, see if it tells us anything about budget. It does not. The reviews are kind of all over the place on IMDb. Someone gave it 1 star. I don't think it's deserving of 1 star. That's not cool. Some people, looks like there's a couple 5s and a 6, but there's not a lot of reviews yet. You can check this out on Tubi or on Amazon. I'm going to come out with my review and say you should check it out. If you do, you know, like black comedies, I'd say check it out. It's not, you know, laugh out loud funny, but there's some funny, awkward parts in it.
Yeah.
And I think anytime you can support independent cinema, I think you should do it. And considering this is on Tubi, which means you can watch it for free, I'd recommend just check it out. Help support them.
I agree.
Okay. Again, thanks to Dark Discussions for, of course, hosting our podcast and just being our friends. And we love all you guys. There's a lot of great great shows on the Dark Discussions Network that we do recommend you check out. Of course, Dark Discussions, you have His and Hers Movie Podcast, and a bunch of other really great shows right now. So please look them up, and you can find them on all podcast directories or on the website of Dark Discussions. For us, our next episode we should be doing pretty soon. We just watched one of the movies today. And
this will be three.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do three. So do you want to tell everyone what we're covering in our next episode?
Yeah, we're going to be covering The Crow.
Yep.
The series Lovecraft Country.
Yep.
And 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Exactly. Good. That's good. I forgot about the Lovecraft Country. I knew we were doing three things, but I couldn't remember what the third was. So, yeah, we've been watching that, and that's been it's been a lot of fun, so we're looking forward to talking about that. So please check us out. We really appreciate you taking the time listening to us. And again, thanks to all of our friends and other podcasts on the Dark Discussions Network. And we'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
The next film to be reviewed is a foreign film entitled Watch List, I believe to be from the Philippines. The film is going to be released, or I should say reviewed, by Derek Bourgeois and maybe a few other co-hosts. But either way, Derek Bourgeois was the individual who forwarded me the review. So I'm going to give him dibs for that. And we can get into the review of the Filipino police thriller, Watch List.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to this special event for the Dark Discussions Network. I'm Derek, of course. Derek Bourgeois, to be more frank, and you guys probably know me more from my other shows, and you know, it's always good to be doing this. I always liked doing this when I used to do it for Horrorphilia, Bloody Bits for here and times, and it's a good thing that Phil put this together. But today I got, you might be hearing my voice twice today, actually, so I hope you enjoy it so far, guys. But the first review I got for you guys is a little film known as Watch List. For, originally, IMDb has it as 2019, but it actually got its release here to us streaming in the States in 2020. And it's a Filipino film, a crime drama, per se. And a little short plot synopsis from the IMDb. After her husband is mysteriously killed in the drug wars of the Philippines, a widowed mother of three must confront her own darkness to protect her children from further harm. Yes, this film is very cultural in the aspect where this is a lot of shit that I actually kind of see in my own neighborhood. Not to this extent, though, that these people are going through. So this is definitely a Philippines thing that's going on. And you can see that the director, Ben Ricci, is trying to say a message with his film of the violence and the things that are going on within the country at the time with this, pretty much this drug list that they do. It's kind of fucked up where when we see in the opening of the film where Maria and her husband Toro are put onto this drug list for being ex-users and pushers, it's kind of fucked up in a sense where they're being forced to do this. And of course, as the things spiral to craziness after that, when Toro is brutally killed in the middle of the street, and it's kind of intense and heartbreaking for Maria's character. The actress who plays Maria, Alexandra De Rossi, fucking fantastic in the performance. You could really see the change her character as the film progresses on. And when she gets back into this underbelly world that she was once part of in a different, darker role, and fighting for her kids, it's very scary, the aspect how the kids get involved, especially her oldest son. It's very scary in that sense where you don't know what's going to happen till the very end, and it's a cold, dark film. Very violent and very brutal and very raw in its cinematography. I was very surprised with this one. This one was very taken back on how this one turned out for myself in general. It was a very exceptional film and very beautiful. You could tell this film was made by the heart, with the heart of its filmmakers and its cast to display their country's problems at the time period. And, you know, more films like this should come out around the world. I love films like this, these social commentary films. It's a very brutal, honest film, and it actually blew me the fuck away. I was, excuse my language, you know, but it's a film that really kind of touched me in some spot and left me cold in some others. And it's beautifully shot, you know. It's there's so much I could say without, I don't really want to spoil it for you guys who haven't seen this. It's not really a horror film. So if you're looking for the more horror-ish review here, yeah, it's not that type of film. But if you like good, like, underbelly stories that touch from the heart and soul and hold you through to the end, I do recommend this film. It's actually one of the better films I've seen of the year, of this year that's not been that great, let's be honest. But, you know, films like this should be seen by more people. And for that, I give Watchlist a 9 out of 10. I highly enjoyed this for what it was. It is subtitled, so you gotta watch it. But, other than that, fantastic film. As always, I'll probably be back later on in the review, guys, so I'll do my outro, like all my shows, for my next review. But I'll see you when the next review comes out on this episode, so I'll see you then. Peace.
The next film that's to be reviewed is by one of our listeners of the podcast on the network. His name is Sean Fox out of Canada, and he actually contributes to the podcast with numerous feedback, emails, and a contributor to the Dark Discussions podcast Facebook group. He's a good guy, and I asked him to do a couple of reviews, and this is one of the reviews that he did. It's called Evil Under the Skin is the film. It was considered a rural cabin horror film, I guess. I know it is a independent film, low budget, and has, I guess, a lot of exploitation elements that would interest midnight movie films, but I'm not sure if the film's any good, so we'll have to hear what Sean has to say. Folks who want to get a hold of Sean, you can find him on the Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. But either way, thanks, Sean, for doing a review.
Evil Under the Skin, a 2019 movie, listed as a horror with a running time of 90 minutes. Directed by Jeffrey Schneider, writer was Luc Bernier, released June 1st, 2019 in the USA. The production company was listed as MASH and WJD Films. The film stars Helene Udi as Sophie, Pamela Such as Ranger Jenny Ross, Donna Hamblin as Carla, Carl Bailey as Sheriff Roy Keeps, Colton Baumgartner as Dale, Tim O'Hearn as Matt, and Angela Baraja as Rosalie. I apologize if I mispronounced your last name, Angela. The synopsis, or premise, of the movie is a mother and daughter head off for a secluded weekend to reconnect. Little do they know the sordid past of the home they are staying in, or the strangeness it attracts as they descend into madness. Hello, my name is Sean, and I am doing a review on the movie Evil Under the Skin. Before I give my base review, I must admit this movie didn't connect with me on any level, sadly. I don't want to be that jerk reviewer who shreds someone's hard work. I think the cast and crew worked hard and gave their best for this movie. I feel, whether it was the writing, editing choices, or attempts to be way too many things without being good at anything in particular, I felt my time watching this movie was not rewarded. I will say that the musical score was enjoyable, but the thing I enjoyed most was the cinematography used for the many cutscenes. The shots of the forest and the lake were breathtaking. They would make excellent fodder for a travelogue or promotional material for your local tourism ads. But aside from that, the movie itself was just not one I could get on board with. My friend Phil has his take on a good horror movie having the three B's, which are blood, boobs, and beasts, which, as Phil informed me, was from the mind of Joe Bob Briggs in his review books and rating system that he uses. Well, the movie certainly has the boobs quota met. The other B's were replaced by banal and boring, though. It felt like the very lovely actress Angela Baraha, again, I apologize for the mispronunciation of your last name, who plays Rosalie, spends almost her entire time on screen showing off her boobs in one way or another, whether it makes sense or not. Again, she is a beautiful actress, but it sure felt like her acting talent was being wasted in this movie's attempted storyline. I wish her much success, as I wish it to the rest of the cast and crew in their future endeavors, because it sure was not in this movie, sadly. I've held off long enough, but I guess I have to actually relive this movie again, so here we go. As the premise mentions, this is a story of a mother and daughter who are on a bonding trip. They have rented a lake house, which is located in a very picturesque forest and lake area. You get the feeling that this mother and daughter have had some previous trauma or challenges in their past, and this is a way for them to reconnect. We are introduced to a brother and sister team who may or may not be incestuous serial killers or just really super creepy weirdos. We also have a sheriff and a parks ranger who have traumatic backstories. They are brought together for an uninspiring romantic interlude. Again, the story from the start feels off, and I think the cast did the best that they could trying to portray multiple characters who just don't and didn't resonate in any way, shape, or form to me. The story, in quotation marks, because this is me doing an audio file, reveals that the brother and sister team are no good-ins, up to no good, and are targeting the innocent-seeming mother Sophie and her buxom daughter Rosalie. Now, is it just to mess with them, steal from them, or kill them? That is the question. Insert dramatic music and cutscene to the lake or the forest. We see the interactions between Sophie and Rosalie, Sophie trying hard to make this a happy trip for her and her daughter. Rosalie is laid back with an aversion to wearing clothing, and that includes in front of her mother. Again, I am a prude, I'm not sure. I like boobs in my movies when applicable, but almost all of those scenes just felt very awkward and had me cringe pondering why are there so many hints of incestuous things going in this story for half the cast. This isn't Game of Thrones, dang it. Though I wish it had Game of Thrones production. Anyways, we get a glimpse that Sophie is maybe not in a healthy state of mind. From prescription drug use to how she responds as things begin to devolve around her in her day-to-day routine. Rosalie is a bubbly happy, and did I mention her busty bosoms are out almost all the time? Well, we see the nasty baddies meet Sophie and try to ingratiate themselves with their down-home creeper ways, with Sophie barely reacting to their, hey, we are incestuous serial killers, or at least incestuous criminal types. The movie progresses with the downward spiral of Sophie, her over-the-top, not-so-subtle, I-may-be-psychotic dream sequences, and flashes not drawing you to the greater mystery. As Sophie continues to ride the crazy train, and the brother-sister team continue to excel at making you roll your eyes, we have the innocuous story of the budding romance between Sheriff Keeps and Ranger Jenny. I guess in a perfect world, you would fall for their common, tragic backstories and wish them nothing but lovely bliss. But because it is so incongruent to the actual main story arc, I was left thinking, who cares? And this should be in a very different movie. When we finally reach the end of this mess, we realize that poor psychotic Sophie has been imagining this whole weekend. Her daughter is dead. The creepy weirdos never needed to be in this, and why the flip did I just waste 90 minutes this way? I again say no disrespect to the cast or crew, but if I never have to watch this movie again, it will be far too soon. Even with all the magnificent memory magic, they can't save this movie. I would only recommend this movie to you if you are someone that I don't like because you are hateful, mean, or overly selfish. And that's my take on Evil Under the Skin.
Okay, thank you very much, Sean Fox of Canada. Also, folks should know that some of these reviews may be negative and some of these reviews may be positive, but each of you can individually watch the films and make your own choice. Again, this is just one reviewer or one podcast that is making their judgment on the film. Also, it should be noted that a lot of these reviews, or I should say screeners that we are to review, may be fantastic or may be very low budget films. It depends on the quality, but it is always hit and miss, as you can probably gather. But one thing for sure is everybody can check out these movies and make their own determination. Now, we have about 19 films that screeners were given, so what that means is, since we are now about an hour into the episode, we will probably have three more episodes the next 3 weeks. So that would be five films per episode of this podcast, and what will that mean for you is that you will now have 4 weeks of podcasts to look forward to until quarter one of 2021, when the next batch of screeners will be reviewed. So that is actually a good thing. So look out next week for the next group of screeners to be reviewed. And as Derek Bourgeois said in his review earlier, he has another review coming up. And since this is already an hour, we're going to split his second review into one of the next three episodes. Also, we would like to say thank you for joining us here at From the Art House to the Grindhouse, a podcast of movies and screeners to come out on video on demand. You can reach all of us here at www.darkdiscussions.com. On the website, there is a contact form where you can contact us directly and give your opinions on any of these films or anything else that you would like to comment on. The podcast will have its own feed called From the Art House to the Grindhouse Podcast, or you can go to Dark Discussions Network of Podcasts. That's another feed that this will be on. The difference is the second one, Dark Discussions Network of Podcasts, will have this podcast, but all the 30 or so podcasts of the Dark Discussions Network will also be on that feed, while the Art House to the Grindhouse feed will just have that specific podcast on it. What this means for you is that you could hear some of your co-hosts that you heard tonight on any of the other various podcasts on the network. And also, you can go to their various Facebook groups. They all have their own emails and Facebook groups, but if you aren't sure, you can always just go straight through darkdiscussions.com and the contact form and contact us that way. So, thank you once again for listening to this I guess, debut episode of From the Art House to the Grindhouse. And we will catch you next week with an additional 5 movies to review.
You get more out of life when you go out to a movie.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat.
The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.